When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Well, hello, howdy, and hey there, everybody. It's Ginger Minj with these very fancy eyebrows that I drew on with a pencil I bought for $2 at the Walgreens. Isn't that nice? They almost look real.
They do.
It's the delusion of brownness. I know I'm highbrow right here.
It's a perfect delusion.
And I'm lowbrow over here. They're not sisters. They're not twins.
And
I barely speak.
I'm no-brow over here.
I like that, though. I think it's nice. Welcome back to Local Queen, the podcast where we celebrate all of our hometown sheroes. I am here in beautiful, exotic Boston, Massachusetts, with the one and the only Severity Stone.
Hello.
Hi. We are coming to you out of drag because we're not in drag today.
And you're not paying us.
No. Well, I mean, maybe you are. I don't know. Cash App, Venmo, let's go. Whatever you got, we will take it. But I'm very excited to talk to you because we have never met. We literally just met a few moments ago.
It is an absolute pleasure to meet you. I'm a huge fan.
Oh my God. Well, you are tall.
I am a huge fan.
How tall are you?
I'm 6'6".
6'6", flat-footed.
Yeah.
So when you're in drag, are you flat-footed?
No.
I got those Flintstone feet. I look like I should be running the car.
I have bad feet. I have, you know, with the tallness comes the joint problems and stuff. But yeah, I am 6.5 feet tall. You're like 6'5", right? So we're about...
I'm like 6'5", but really 5'3".
Okay, but with a kitten heel, you're 6'5".
With a kitten heel, and if we decide to go like the metric route, then okay. I do believe I am just like half an inch shorter than you.
Yeah, it adds up.
Yeah, it all adds up. What do I know? I was homeschooled. It was fine.
I didn't go to school.
Math is... I was homeschooled, and I still did not graduate at the top of my class.
I graduated with honors, and I still decided to do drag.
Bless you.
I went to art school.
Art school?
That I dropped out. And then I decided to start doing drag.
So, well, yeah. Then let's jump into it. I want to know all about you. So please introduce yourself to our listeners, to me, and give me just kind of like a brief overview of who Severity is.
Brief overview. My name is Severity Stone. I've been doing drag and performing and hosting events and such here and around Boston for the past, I would say, almost 11 years. I grew up an artist. I grew up around here. I haven't traveled very far out of New England, quite unfortunately, but, you know, money. I grew up creating, drawing, making clothes for Barbies and such, and then it just kind of, I've always made things. You know, I've been a sculptor, I've been a painter, and I did all that, and, like I said, I went to art school, Mass Art, Massachusetts College of Art.
Mass Art!
Very briefly, and, I was happy that I did because it wasn't the right thing for that time. When you're fucking like 19 years old, are we allowed to say that?
Yeah, just say whatever the fuck you want. Right,
thank fucking God.
Now you leave him out of it. He has nothing to do with the podcast.
Sorry, God. I don't think he's here. He's not listening. I went to art school and I was like, this is dumb. I don't know what to do. I don't know why I'm here. I don't know how to make a career out of art. So I just left. Just, you know. There's nothing wrong with that. Also, I was paying for it myself. By paying for it, I mean I'm still getting student loan bills in the mail, and they can send them to me until the day I die.
I did not go to...
Also, federal loan, I hope you're not watching. I don't exist.
I didn't go to college simply for that reason. Like, I didn't have money, and I knew that I was going to be involved with, like, the arts or theater or something like that. And I was like, well, why am I going to pay money that I don't have that I'm going to be paying off the rest of my life? So they can teach me things I already know.
Exactly. And they don't set you up to know about that when you're a teenager. You know, you come right out of high school. Like, I'm literally, like, just coming out of being a literal child. And you're like, but now you have to go off and be on your own. And, like, I, you know, had a have a very not wealthy family. So they were like, if you want to go to school, that's on you, boo. And I was like, okay. And I did get like some grants and some loans and things. But like the thing they don't tell you about loans when you're 19 years old is that you have to pay them back. Like I knew that, but I was like, eh, like don't hand a kid like a check for like $9,000 and expect them to like spend it on
like give it back.
Give it back or like spend it on books. I was like, yeah, I'm buying books. But I don't even remember what I spent it on. But yeah, it was just fast forward, you know, that just wasn't the thing for me. I left, started working, doing retail, whatever. And then when I turned 21, I started coming out to the scene. I got introduced to, you know, the drag scene here and all the shows and stuff was going on. And I'd like known about drag, but I was never exposed to it until mm-hmm. I was, you know, out in the clubs. So a lot of my friends like, oh, I was coming out to the club and I was 16. I was like, I was in high school. My parents would have like slaughtered me if I snuck out to like get into the back door of a club. I never like thought to do that, but a lot of people did. I was like, how were y'all going to like clubs and shit when you were like 15? But anyway.
I'm going to tell you how I did. Because there was one gay bar in Lake County. And I remember you had to park in the ditch across the street. And you had to run across the highway to get into it because all the rednecks would sit out there in their trucks and throw things at you. Mm. So the only way that I could get in, I looked kind of like my cousin Jennifer's boyfriend at the time. I kind of looked enough like him that I was like, if I put on like some makeup and a wig, I can get in. I can pass. So my very first time in the gay bar was for Pimp and Ho Night, back when that was socially acceptable.
Oh. Yeah, okay.
I looked like Carney Wilson on a bender. It was not a good look. But I ran across that street. I went in there, and it was 25-cent pitcher beer night, like, on top of everything. Oh, so
this was in, like, the 1800s.
Yes. Back, it's been 84 years. So I went in there, and I was like, I feel so free. Everybody's being lovely to me. I look a hot damn mess. But none of them know. It was my little secret.
I mean, that's I totally like can relate to that, because like when everybody first starts doing drag or whatever, like you swear to God that you're like everything.
Yeah.
But if you walk into like any place with that kind of attitude, like that's how you do get into a bar underage. Like mm-hmm. if you walk in and drag if you have a bag and someone with you, like, oh, we're fine. 99% of the time, like, they won't say anything.
No, they're like, oh, girl, you're late for the show.
Come on. It's like, oh, yeah, they'll just let you into, like, the Met Gala. Like, oh, my friend's over there. Like, sorry, I'm late. They're like, go in, I guess.
Your outfit's not terrible enough. Quick, go change over there. Oh, the Met Gala. I feel like, just to sidetrack real quick, what are your thoughts on the looks at the Met Gala for the last couple of years?
I mean, as a costume maker and drag entertainer who wears costumes all the time, like most of it is like not really that impressive to me, because it's just I think it's cool to see, like, oh my god, what is Rihanna wearing?
And like she always turns that's it. Now, Rihanna turns it all the time
because she's perfect.
I thought that Billie Eilish looked really gorgeous
this past year,
but I also didn't quite understand how that look fit the theme or what the theme was really supposed to encompass.
Yeah, I didn't understand the theme as well. It was like American fashion. So I was like, clothes?
Right.
Everyone just kind of interpreted their own way. Actually,
sponsored by American Eagle.
This is pretty much. Also, your computer's about to die.
Oh, I had it plugged in. Is this not working?
We're just too much. I think that outlet's not working. But yeah, I did Kim Kardashian's iconic Dementor nightmare look. Like 2 days after the Met Gala at Legacy.
Did you?
Yeah. I was in a sewing mood. I was like, we're coming out as like Kim Kardashian Dementor. So I like made the ponytail and I went to Legacy.
But I've noticed like now they're starting to invite the queens into that world. And typically I feel like even the queens are kind of missing the mark because I feel like they're a little too afraid to do what they do. Because, like we're used to drag. We're used to putting on every rhinestone and feather and sequin.
Like camp, like, that's what we wake up every day and do.
Yeah.
So it's, like, these people who are kind of, you put in the situation where it's, you're expected to bring it to a next level, but sometimes that next level looks not organic.
Yeah.
Yeah, that makes sense.
Like, it does. It makes complete
like
sense.
Force. I'm like, I'm not believing that this person is really invested in wearing this insane outfit. I'm not going to mention anybody, but like, you know, there's certain ones where it's like, why?
I feel like the I wouldn't say regular, but the non-drag guests that go, they think they're being very edgy by wearing certain things. And then the queens show up and they don't want to stand out too much, I guess. So they kind of dumb it down a little bit.
Yeah.
So it's just like this consistent mediocrity across the board. And it's not, that's not for everybody. I'm not saying everybody was mediocre or that I could do any better. I'm just saying that I think from now on, they really need to pump that shit up.
Yeah.
And if any of you other queens get invited, like
tickets are like $30,000 fucking dollars. Right. Like go there with the outfit. Like,
go on stilts. They need to invite Ivy Winters. Do you? How do you, well, where would you fit with stilts?
It's outside. Met Gala's outside.
Okay. But why do you
I actually stilts? Performed because I knew that you were coming. No, a couple months ago, I performed with them actually at Legacy. They're like painters, like drywall stilts, about 18 inches. So they're like circus.
Like cray cray.
Like I could be in the club. But yeah, I just wanted them for a really long time. And yeah, I thought if I was ever to be at the Met Gala, I would show up and get out of like a stretch fucking Hummer or something and be like 9 feet tall.
Why not?
Why the fuck not?
I think that'd be great. So this is actually, this is not a podcast. This is a petition and a call to action to get Severity Stone invited to the Met Gala next year.
And you.
And me. Well, I'm too tall.
But I need you to be
stilts.
In flats.
In flats. And then I just come out from underneath.
Out of
can
one
I
of
hold
my
your hand
legs?
Like this?
You can. Yeah, I'll have a really long arm to it. I'll just reach down and hold your hand.
But just one. Make just sure one. The other one's all the way up like
the
that.
Other one is all the way up.
So, I know we're getting sidetracked a little bit, but enjoy that. That's fine. That's
it's
a
funny.
Little,
I like
tidbit, sidetracking. You know? I want to know, so how long have you been doing drag? You said about 11 years?
Approaching 11, yeah.
And how did you get started?
I don't know, I just did. I mean, yeah, like I said, like I went to school, I just started working. And then, yeah, when I turned 21, that's where we were at earlier. I just started coming out and like I was dating someone at the time and they introduced me to like local bars and stuff around here. And I experienced drag. I got to see people like Misery and Phina Barbital, you might know.
Absolutely. I love Misery too. I mean, I love Phina. Absolutely. But Misery, pageant girl.
Mm-hmm.
So sickening. So talented.
Incredible. And I was hearing stories of Misery before I was even like out of the club, like my boyfriend at the time, like who was a couple years older, knew of Misery and was like, oh, don't fuck with her. Like she's a bad bitch. And I was like, I'm like 17. I have no idea what you're talking about. But then I met her. I was like, oh, she's a bad bitch. And like, yeah, she has such a legacy behind her. And like, you know, all that, you know, the Destinies and the Chris Knievels and stuff. And I was just started coming out to Jacques Cabaret, which is right around the corner from where we are.
Which is where Katya really got her start.
And yeah, coming out to see Perestroika with Katya and all of them. That was my introduction. And I was just enthralled by the artistry of it.
And what made you go, oh, this is my world. This is what I want to do.
Well, I wasn't sure that I knew it was what I wanted to do. I just tried it. Mm-hmm. Like I kind of like stuck my fingers in the pot or whatever.
Did you wait until Halloween? Because that's when most drag babies are born.
I think that might've been the first time that I did like drag. I mean, I don't know if you can tell from me, I'm kind of into Halloween and horror and stuff. I know. My fingernails glow in the dark.
Well, it's easier to find them that way.
You know? God knows where my hands have been. You gotta, you know. Anyway. Yeah. I was very, Halloween was probably the first time. And I've always loved Halloween. I've always liked, like I said, like fashion and dressing up and making things and expressing myself through the way I look. Like before I started doing drag, I would come out like as a boy. And I would like, it was just like 2011, 2010, it's like when Lady Gaga, like the spiked shoulders and stuff. And I would make these jackets and like glasses with chains on them and stuff. And I would just go out to the club and like be a faggot.
So Lady Gaga was your gateway drag.
Sort of. Yeah. She was one of my biggest inspirations to like push it there. And then I took it to, you know, the drag aspect. And yeah, and I just kind of rolled with it. And then opportunities came and I kept growing and.
What was your first drag performance?
That I can remember. This is where we pull up a picture of it. It's my first profile picture on Facebook, if anybody wants to look at it. Lady Gaga, So Happy I Could Die. I was living with my mom at the time in Somerville, Massachusetts, which isn't far from here. I borrowed my sister's dress. My sister is a couple years younger than me, but like I borrowed like her dress. I didn't have a cinch or anything, so I duct taped my body. Ooh. I think I had like a shitty bra and I stuffed socks into it. And I made this like jacket thing with like poofy shoulders. And it was like an amateur competition thing at Machine Nightclub, RIP, which is like defunct. Very sad. But yeah, I just did it. And I think from that point, like stepping on that stage, there was no looking back.
Do you remember what the number was?
It was Gaga, So Happy I Could.
Oh, So Happy I Could Die. Yes. Yeah. Oh, we spoke about this.
Yeah.
I just thought you were saying you were just so happy.
I also was so happy I could die.
And did you win?
I did not.
No.
But, you know, it didn't hurt my spirit.
Hey, losing is the new winning.
It was an opportunity. And like, there are so many more, not enough, but there are still more opportunities nowadays for younger, newer performers as compared to even then, which wasn't like that long ago. You know, it was like you had to like really like stick your neck out and like be friends with people to like get opportunities mm-hmm. like that. So I was very grateful for that and to make the friends that I did. And and things just kind of...
I remember when I started doing drag, so I've been doing it 16 years now. And when I first started, it was before Drag Race. Mm-hmm. So my whole like knowledge of drag was the Southern pageant scene. My drag mother like threw me into that world. I was not ready, but you only want to be embarrassed so many times. You know. So it forced, it's like boot camp. It forces you to get better and better and better. And so it was very, my drag was very structured. And I don't necessarily remember what my very first performance in a club was. My first performance in drag was actually in a play. That was how I got started. I got into it through theater. But anyway, that's a pointless story. I was just telling you.
I want to hear it.
Oh, well, so I got cast in this play. It's called Boys, Boys, Boys. And it was an original play that was based on some true events of some nightclub in New York in the 70s. And they wanted 8 men that would go like full frontal nude and 2 drag queens. And I had never done drag before. But I was like, I do not want to get naked in front of everybody because I know my mama and my grandma are going to come see the show. Mm-hmm. So I borrowed my sister's dress and I borrowed a wig from my grandmother and I stopped at Big Lots and got like the worst makeup ever and just kind of slapped it on and went and I got the role and I kind of took to it like a fish to water. You know, it was just, yeah, it felt kind of
the same.
Yeah, it's like the
what I did. Yeah,
it's so scary when you like right before you take the step out on stage, and then you take the step out, and you're like
something
in this
changes,
whole new world.
Like, oh, let's like now I get it. Even though like you still don't get it because you just started. And I always tell people like every single day, every single time that I'm in drag, I learn something new, and I'm never like. And I hate when people kind of just like stop learning. Like when people like, oh, I do this, and like that's it. Like I don't want to learn new things. I don't want to accept new things about drag. You should always be learning and always growing. And like it's okay to like, yeah. I look back at my makeup from 3 months ago, and I'm like, why did I do my eyebrows like that? But it's okay because at that time that made sense to me, and like you just keep trying new things, and like I'm not coming for you. I still have none. I have essence of eyebrows. It's like the shadow of that.
Ode to brow.
Ode to brow. But yeah, I learned like so much over the years. And also I want to stress like very hard how much I learned that. Because I heard you mention earlier something about people using the term female impersonator. I do think that that is like such like a tired, stupid thing to even say about drag. If that's what you do, then that's what you do. But that's just like a...
Just to catch everybody
archaic.
Up, before we started recording the podcast, we were scrolling through Facebook, my husband and I, and we saw an announcement for a pageant that's coming up. Mm-hmm. And it's like, da-da-da-da-da-da, F-I, which stands for female impersonator. So it's like female impersonator of the year. But the pageant is open to everybody. There's been a lot of trans winners of that particular pageant. So we were just talking about how archaic that term really is, because I mean, we've made a lot of progress with the whole gender spectrum and all that kind of stuff. You know, I myself identify as non-binary. So it doesn't offend me as a term, but I do think it sounds a little outdated.
Yeah, and I felt that way about that term for a while, And yeah, so I overheard what you were talking about. I was in the bathroom douching. And but giggle, yeah, I had to get a laugh out of it. Yeah, like that's the way that I was introduced to drag. You know, I love the people that introduced me to drag, but it was very much that. It was like, we dress up as Lady Gaga. We're gay men who dress up in women's clothes, and that's what drag is. That was my introduction to it. But I learned as quickly as I possibly could that it was not that. And like now, like, my eyes are so open to the endless possibilities of drag, and that it's literally for anybody and everybody. Like,
yeah,
regardless of your shape or your color or your gender or your identity, like, drag is for everybody, point blank, period. That is not open for discussion, like, or debate. I have a lot of incredible friends who have shown me and taught me so many amazing things about their drag and how they interpret it. And I honestly, like, I do, like, out of drag, like, I identify as kind of like gender queer, like, just in between. Like, I don't, like, love being a man because men, like, suck. Like, I don't like identifying with, like, cisgendered men. So I'm, like, somewhere in that realm of things. And my drag, too, I also, like, I'm not trying to be a woman, quote unquote. Mm-hmm. I like to feminize myself because it makes me feel.
Before you move on, I want to ask you, what is your definition of drag? Just in general.
My definition of drag? I think it's just queer people wearing what they like.
Mm-hmm. And queer, I say this in all of my shows.
Or straight people too.
Well, I think everybody is queer because queer means weird. It means different.
Yeah.
And honestly, if you're not queer at least a little bit, you're doing something wrong. Because everybody should be individual. And yeah, everybody should express exactly how they feel on the inside, on the outside. You know, and to me, my definition of drag has always been, it's like a celebration of femininity. Mm-hmm. And I think that anybody is capable of that.
Well, for a drag queen, but also, you know, drag kings is a celebration of masculinity or, you know, the things that are in between.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. No, you're absolutely right about that. So I have been checked and corrected. But I love that. See, that's why we have these discussions, you know. Okay. So you were talking about how, you know, You look back and you're like, I'm always learning. And when you first started, what kind of a narrow view of drag you had was? Just like because
it was only
what you were. Yeah, it's what you were exposed to.
Yeah.
Me was the Southern pageant drag. And it wasn't until I got onto Drag Race and started touring around the world that I realized, like, my eyes opened up to all of the possibilities of drag. Mm-hmm. And I find myself now, that's one reason I really wanted to do this podcast, is because to me, drag is such a regional sport and it changes everywhere you go.
Oh yeah. Definitely.
There's a different vibe. There's different techniques. There's this whole different feel.
The
to
vibe
every...
especially. Like, yeah. I haven't gone to many places, but like, I would tell you, like, I went to Chicago where you just came from, and it was just... The only thing similar to Boston is that it's a big city, but like, the vibe was different. The energy was different. Honestly, I want Boston to be more like that, but we don't have as many like venues and stuff. But like, I'm sure you like probably went to like Boys Town and stuff. And like, my experience there was like so remarkable and memorable. And it was unlike anything I'd experienced before. And I was so welcomed as an outsider. Like, I've literally never been here before, but like, you know, everything was just so different, but also, you know, welcoming and familiar at the same time.
But I find myself now traveling around to all these places and I'm sitting with the girls in the dressing room going like, what are you doing right there? And then I try it and sometimes I like it, sometimes I don't, but I'm always learning something new. And it's strange because, like, even now, you know, All-Star 6 just ended, but we filmed it a year ago and my entire face has changed since then just because I found different things that I like to do. That's the fun of drag. It's just expressing and learning and having fun with it.
And the new thing that you decided to do was those eyebrows?
This one. I don't like her. I like her.
I'm kidding. I had to bring it back around.
Full circle.
You know, we can always learn, and you know, you've traveled the world and done like incredible things. I haven't quite gotten there yet, but someday, you know, hope to. But if I can give, when you say like what drag means to me, it means a queer expression of art in exploring gender and exploring things inside of yourself that you probably knew were always there, but you never knew how to do it. And there's no right or wrong way to do drag.
No.
Like, you may not look great, but you'll get there. You know, everybody.
Well, but even then, like, looks are so subjective too.
Exactly.
Like, to the mass majority, you may not look great, but you're going to have a handful of people that are like, I've never seen anyone more attractive in my life than exactly. you are in this moment.
It doesn't matter what you look like. Someone in the world will be horny for you.
Exactly.
So take that.
So hold on to that. We're going to hear a word from our sponsor. And then we'll be back for the second half of this fabulous podcast.
Yeah.
And we're back. Wasn't that good?
Wow, I had
a full sip.
A full sip, yeah.
It's Ginger Minj here with local queen Severity Stone.
Well, I gotta go. My ears
Well, you know, I'm the cross-dresser for Christ. So I try to find the hope, serenity, and peace in every situation.
No, I'm really happy to be here, Eureka.
I am Mimi, I'm Lake. First, last, and always.
You're Mimi, I didn't win.
Well, I didn't win three times. At least I'm consistent, you know? So let's talk about drag a little bit more, and particularly your drag. So did you ever do any pageants?
I did, actually.
Yeah?
I competed in the Miss Boston Pride pageant. Ooh. Probably like halfway into my career, as we call it. There was like five contestants, and I think I got fourth place. But then by default, like, someone dropped out, and like another person like died in an airplane crash. No, they didn't.
I was like, where are they traveling from?
I ended up with some sort of a crown, like, later on down the line, only because like people had dropped out and like somebody moved.
Somebody
away.
Got pregnant.
Somebody got pregnant. Somebody moved away. And they were related. Like, fine, we'll give it a severity. But I also did the Miss. Scream Queen.
Oh, that sounds fun.
Salem, 2014.
I just went to Salem. It was hosted for the first time.
By I don't even want to say her name because she sucks. The spooky one with the contacts. Yeah, I got her title. Yeah, so I competed against a bunch of other local, like, New England performers, and it was, like, a big Halloween pageant. That was, like, my big, like, oh my god, I won something, you know?
I love that, though, because to me, like, everything needs a theme. Everything can really, like, do better with a theme.
Yeah.
Benefit. That's what, everything benefits from a theme.
Exactly. And if the theme is something that I just do naturally, I'm like, okay, let's do it. And, yeah, that was, like, kind of, yeah, I'd say, you know, 5, 6, well, wait, what did I say? 2014? So that was 7 years ago. Yeah. I was still kind of new to things and like getting my bearings, but like, I was like, oh, this is something that I'm like really excited about. And it was crazy. We was at this, the Revere Hotel, I believe it was called, in Salem, Massachusetts. And yeah, it was, you know, all my friends like Violencia and Rainbow Fright, Phenobarbital was there. No one was happy that I won.
That's how you know you're doing something right.
That's what I knew. I feel like that's what I knew. I was like, everyone was like visibly pissed that like I won because like they thought for some, like, you know, no tea, no shade. But like, yeah, people were like shady and bitchy about it because they're like, oh, I've been doing drag for so long. Like, why didn't I win? I was like, because you didn't.
Exactly. There's really no other reason in the world. People have asked me that. Well, why didn't you win? Because I didn't. Because
I didn't.
It doesn't matter. It
doesn't. And that, you know, even just winning that, like, if I hadn't, it still would have mattered so much to me just to be there and to have that experience. And it's a big, crowded place, and I had never performed. We had, like, different categories that we had to do. We had to do, like, three different costumes. And, like, yeah, that was, like, one of the pinnacles of my drag career.
What were your categories? Did you have, like, did you have a talent category?
I don't have any talent. What was it? There was like a presentation. We had to do like a runway. It was American Horror Story, like freak show theme. It was like when Freak Show came out, right? So I did like the guy with a face on the back of his head. So I like made a mask of my face and it was like on the back of my head and had the costume that went with it. There was a performance and then there was like a like where you just did a number and then like the judges watched you and it went like one by one and they watched everybody. And then the last one, I think we just did like another runway. I don't remember what I wore.
Did you do like an evening gown?
No, no. It was all like
coffin couture.
Girl, I told you it was in Salem and it was on Halloween. So
I literally just went to Salem for the first time a couple weeks ago.
It's cute.
I wanted to go look at all the Hocus Pocus places.
Which is just everything, though.
Which is everything. But I also found myself going, okay, now that movie makes no logistical sense to me. Period. Because that's supposed to be across the street, but that's on the other side of town. This is supposed to be on the other side of town, but it's literally across the street.
Yeah. Well, but that's Hollywood.
Hollywood.
Yeah. No, baby. Salem is amazing. Don't go there anywhere near Halloween because it's just like tourist hell.
And a bunch of drag queens dressed like the Sanderson sisters.
Everyone that you've ever seen, they're all there, just running through the streets with brooms, like sweeping up dust and shit. I'm like, no.
We went to the Salem Witch Museum, which turns out is not a museum at all.
It's just like a haunted house.
With
the wax
figures. It's the wax figure diorama.
I went to that when I was like fucking like 7 years old and it like kind of terrified me.
Well,
like,
yeah, they got Satan over in the corner with his glowing eyes.
And I'm wondering, like, do they still have like the same wax figures? Like that shit like terrorized me.
I'm gonna tell you, they do.
School field trip. I was like a child and they brought me to the fucking Salem Witch Museum and I was like, this is fucked. I think that's why I turned out like this.
Because of the Salem Witch Museum.
I went to the Salem and they're like, this woman's being crushed by a pile of rocks. And it's like the sound, the voiceover, and it's pitch dark. You're like sitting on the floor. And there's like a woman screaming and it's like a dire. I'm like, okay.
And then a pentagram just totally lights up in the middle of the floor where you're sitting. It's like, oh, no.
All of a sudden I like blinked and I had white contacts in and I was like, I guess I'm spooky now.
This is it. This is my path.
This is me.
The one thing that I did love is that, you know, anybody who knows me knows I'm a huge Wizard of Oz freak. And they have an original first edition copy of The Wonderful Wizard of Oz. There, that's like the one artifact that they have, but it is under glass and they wouldn't let me touch it.
Well, we can always break in.
Okay, we can just stand there like this.
I look kind of waxy sometimes.
I do. Well, I do today because I have this like this moisturizer on. I think I just wiped away part of my eyebrow.
Well,
I'm gonna be back to nubs by the time we're done with
this. We're gonna take another 45 minute break. We'll be back.
So you won that pageant.
Yeah.
And it really just kind of like reaffirmed for you that you were doing the right thing. You were finally making your mark.
Yeah. And then, yeah, you know, things over the years just kept happening. You know, I've always been just like the local performer. Like I've hosted, I have to emphasize Machine Nightclub. That was like a really huge hit for us right before COVID started. Having very little to do with COVID, this huge nightclub that we all used to work at called Machine got closed and it's like demolished, like no longer there. So it's a very, very sad thing. That was like my home away from home, as was for a lot of people. And it was a long time coming, you know. Rent is expensive.
We dealt with that.
The owners
in Orlando, Parliament House got knocked down and it was an institution. And I mean, it's still weird to drive by this plot of land where you spent
haunting.
So much time.
It's haunting.
Yeah. First of all, it's weird because it's such a tiny plot of land. But it was such a huge, expansive, like, building.
Yeah, when you see it, like, not there, it's, like,
yeah, it's like, whoa,
jarring. Because this is, like, right in the middle of the city. So it's, like, imagine if that building across the street was just, like, gone.
Just gone.
And you're, like, and I keep thinking in my head for so long, even though I knew it was gone. It took a long time for me to even, like, go past it. I was, like, I feel like I keep thinking about being there. And I keep remembering, like, I could walk around that place with my eyes closed, like.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah. Where was I going with that?
Oh, we were just talking about life in general. No, so you said that you started, you really got like,
yeah,
Machine.
I started performing a lot of Machine and I started, you know, hosting things here and there. I was doing karaoke and then we started doing these Halloween events, which we're doing another one coming up on the 22nd. I used to host a party called Slasher Bash. It was like a horror-themed, like, pre-Halloween party. Or if it landed on Halloween, it would be Halloween. But, yeah, and I kind of, like, I don't like to typecast myself, and people always call me, like, ooky, spooky, scary. But, like, I am, but, like, also, like, a bit more than that.
Yeah.
I like horror. I like goth. fashion and culture and stuff, and I don't really identify with being like a Halloween decoration.
Yeah.
So people say like, oh, you're so ooky and kooky. Like whenever someone fucking introduces me on the mic, like she's tall. That's the first thing people say. She's ooky and she's kooky and she's spooky. Give it up for.
And she's all the way from backstage.
Yeah, she's all the way from backstage. And then they say Serenity Stone. And I'm like, none of that was right.
But that could be your alter ego. Whenever you don't want to do the ooky spooky, you can dress like a Christmas tree angel and be Serenity.
I actually did get dressed up as a Christmas tree at Machine one time.
Did you? As a Christmas tree?
I was dressed by other people as a Christmas tree. They like pulled me up on stage and put a tree costume on me and like draped because I was the tallest person. It was like hilarious, I guess, but also like very humiliating.
Like they always make me get up and dance an Irish jig on St. Patrick's Day.
Basically the equivalent of that.
Yeah, like, I'm always the leprechaun.
Here, and, like, put me up on stage and put this costume on me, and then like Rainbow Fright, Fina Barbatal, and like whoever else was there just draped Raquel Blake, who's in Dallas now, like draped a bunch of fucking Christmas lights and shit all around my body. That was like almost very triggering. Like, oh, Christmas tree. Let me tell you about a Christmas tree.
Oh, goodness. Do you know Serenity Stone is actually the name of it's a massage parlor in Orlando.
Well, I'm taking them to court.
You should.
Well, you should take them to court. Be like, I know someone who I think is named Serenity Stone.
I said it one time, damn it.
I know.
I'm not even the one drinking.
Listen.
she's gone off to the bar. Black Cat.
Yeah. Oh, you know Spanish?
Just a little bit. I'm a Puerto Rican. Jiggly calls me her quarter porter with cheese.
All right. Well, I'm not gonna.
That's gorgeous.
I'm not gonna address that.
No reason to. Jiggly's problematic. That's what we're getting at.
As long as everyone knows that I'm not.
No, not what? Problematic.
Jiggly.
Oh, you're not Jiggly. No, you're not. You're pretty toned. I like it.
Owned.
Well, compared to me. I know the act we need to do together. We need to do twins. I'll be Danny DeVito and you be Arnold Schwarzenegger.
What did you just call me?
Arnold.
What was the last
name? Hey, Arnold. Schwarzenegger.
It's worse when you say it slower.
Nah, you have to say nah. It's cool. N-E.
So your career is over.
No.
I
How
know.
Dare!
I'm kidding, just to disclaim. Yeah, it's the last name. I'm not going to say because I don't know how to say that properly. Yeah, that would be fun. I would have to.
Well, if you were him, you'd be like, Schwarzenegger.
But I'm not, like, buff. I would be like, Schwarzenegger.
Yeah, why not? I love when people, when I was growing up, they'd be like, is he, you know, like, what, affected by carpal tunnel? Yeah.
Does he have osteoporosis? Like, what do you mean by that?
Osteoporosis, yes. Okay, we're getting sidetracked, but that's what we do. I mean, we're four episodes in. You should know by now. We just talk about shit.
So wait, can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
Who else have you talked to on this show, and what have y'all talked about?
So the very first episode was my best friend, Gidja Galore, from Orlando. We've been working together for years. We co-host a lot of events together. She's like a nice version of me.
Okay.
You know, she can do everything I can do, but she does it with a smile. And my second episode was Stacey Starstruck from Seattle.
Okay.
Who I went to Disneyland with one day. Never worked with her in drag until this past week, a couple weeks ago at this point. And then my last episode was with Carmel DeVille, who is a bearded queen in Chicago. Mm. It's been really good. It's been very diverse and really fun.
I do not personally know any of those people, but yeah, I appreciate that you're doing what you're doing. And also that ties into what I also want to ask, like, what, is it okay if I ask you questions?
Yeah.
What made you decide to do this? Like, why is it important to you? Why did you choose to talk to me? Like, why do you want to talk to and showcase local performers?
Because when I am at
home, I know the answer.
But when I'm at home, I am a local queen. Mm-hmm. And we all are local queen. I mean, like, honestly, the drag race thing is nice. The traveling is nice. That's all well and good. But before Drag Race and after Drag Race, we all have a home. We all have a home base. We all have, you know, the communities that surround us and support us. And having been able to be blessed to travel around and meet incredible girls, like I was telling you, it's like drag is such a local sport. You know what I mean? Like regional sport.
Regional, yeah.
Yeah. It's been really fun to see just how the communities rally around their girls and what those girls do with the platform they've been given. So I feel like it would be shameful of me not to use the platform that I have to kind of lift up your voices and let the world get to know all of you.
Well, thank you. And I appreciate that. I'm actually very, very honored to be a part of what you're doing. And I'm sure whoever's listening to this at home, all my friends and stuff, hi, sorry you didn't get the gig. I got it. I'm sure they'll be very grateful to hear what you have to say. And this is very important to us to get that recognition. And because, you know, you do have a really huge platform. And it's just, it's really cool. So I just wanted to thank you.
I have to tell you, when I was when I was growing up, I am so tongue-tied today. I think it's because you're so tall.
I'm sitting down.
Me too. I'm standing up.
She's standing on the bed.
On a box, yeah. When I was growing up, you know, I really wanted to be famous or successful. I didn't even know what that meant, but you know, I didn't have people when I was growing up that like supported me in doing that. So I felt like fame and success was something that you worked for yourself and it was solely yours. And then once I started to achieve those things and like take those steps to do that, I realized that it wasn't about me. I was literally just kind of a vessel and a tool to tell other people's stories. And that's like the best thing about being in the position that I am is that I do have a platform where I am able to affect change. I am able to uplift other people's voices and make them heard. And I think that that's really like the best part of this job. Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And it's been so cool, like just going from drag scene to drag scene and learning about it.
Yeah.
Tell me a little bit about the drag scene here in beautiful, gorgeous Boston, Massachusetts.
It sucks. Next question. No, I'm kidding. The scene here is incredible. I wouldn't be anything without it. I also hate like the word like scene. Like it's kind of there are like kind of this. There are like different segments of said scene where like certain people do certain things, and like my group of people, my friends, my brethren, my siblings are incredible, and there's such an immense incredible sense of family and also perseverance because of all the things that have been taken away from us, you know, losing all these clubs and with COVID and everything and how hard it is to, you know, just get your footing here. Yeah, I respect and love everybody for that, first and foremost. And also, like, I feel like the Boston drag scene that I know is very, like, Island of the Misfit Toys. Like, okay. Everybody comes from something different. Everyone comes from, like, a different walk of life, a different story, a different type of drag. But we all kind of, like, meet in the middle. You know, like, oh, you're into like weird shit too. Me too. And like, and then I immediately like click with somebody, you know, and that's how I've like made all the friends that I have. And I'm very happy for that. But yeah, you know, we do the best we can. We put on amazing shows, but yeah, it's not that I've seen every other drag scene in the world, but I will guarantee you that what's going on in Boston, as much as people talk shit, like a lot of people like live in Boston, they move to New York and they're like, fuck Boston, that city sucks. And I'm like, yeah, of course it sucks. Every city sucks, but...
Well, when you spend enough time anywhere,
we don't. You know, and I always take, like, offense to that when people are like, you know, the Boston scene is stupid. I'm like, okay, I'm sorry you could afford to move to New York. Good luck getting a gig, girl. But, you know, things are much smaller and more realistic here. And I'm happy to be a part of what's going on here. And,
So do you think that the different sections of the drag scene here in Boston, are they kind of segregated? So you've got like your group and then this group and then that group.
I mean, sometimes a little bit, and like, yeah, we intertwine. Basically, there's like certain people who work at this place who don't necessarily come to the things that we're doing, or vice versa, or those people who do that brunch at that place, but they don't, you know, get involved in this. Like, ideally, you know, it would be lovely if we could all work together, but and everybody always preaches that, like, sense of community. Like, we're all part of this, you know, pride. Everybody gets drunk and we go out in the streets and we're like, we're all together. I'm like, girl, we all hate each other.
But that's how you know you truly love each other.
Yeah, you know, like, let's be real. Like, we don't hang out. Like, you know, there's, like, those certain people. Like, oh, my God, I always love seeing you. Like, you're such an amazing performer. I'm like, you've not been to any of my shows.
Any of them. No, but I'll stalk you on Facebook.
Yeah, like, stalk the shit out of me on Facebook. And, like, that's all that matters to me. I'm like, girl, whatever. As long as I get the one follow. But
when I first started, you know, Orlando was very, like, different sectors for every type of performer. Mm-hmm. If you were a Broadway comedy kind of girl, you did this and this alone. If you were a trans woman, you did this. If you were this an ookie spooky queen, you went over to this club and you did that. And there wasn't a whole lot of crossover. And I would say it was probably after Pulse happened, where I will say the community did a 180 and everybody came together, and now everybody's working with everybody else. It's really cool to see.
Yeah. I do want to, like, elaborate a little bit. Like, I don't want to say fully that we're, like, segregated here. There is a sense of community. I just wish that there was more of a sense of community. Like, the people that I have and the people that I love know exactly who they are, and we have each other's backs, but I wish that people, you know, of positions, of platforms and things, had our backs more often than they did, you know, during the pandemic and stuff and all the things that have been going on. It took so long for us to, or for me, for anybody to get their footing again, and, you know, get bookings and stuff. And, you know, this is my livelihood, this is my job. So it's like, it hard, it be hard sometimes. Yeah. But so, long story short, I am very, very happy and very, very proud of my Boston drag family. And if anyone is listening who has never been to Boston, I encourage you to come and experience.
I encourage you to come wherever you are.
Come wherever.
Everywhere. You are. Everywhere.
Come on my face.
Okay, don't come on my face because it will totally take off the rest of this eyebrow. So, it does kind of look like a sperm now. Ooh, there we go. So I would like, I know we only have a couple minutes left, but I wanted to ask you a couple of questions.
Okay, go ahead. Spitfire.
What is your definition of a local queen?
Someone who hasn't had the opportunities to, like, be on TV, I guess. No, that's not. That's not. A local queen is someone, or our king, or anybody. Drag. I'd like to say local drag performer, because not everybody's a queen. Someone from any town who is just doing drag on a, I get paid maybe a 3-digit amount of money kind of basis. Where we've all started. As you've started, every single person that y'all have seen on TV started out as a local drag artist.
And I'm telling you, most of us, when we're home, we are still.
Yeah.
Look, I'm still.
Like, we don't give a fuck.
I'm rolling up to Hamburger Mary's for $50 and a cheeseburger.
There you go. And that's okay sometimes. But, like, you know, yeah, definition of, yeah, it just means you're from around here. But also, there could be people from, you know, out of state who come here who are also local entertainers. Local just means on the tier of, like, working class, I guess, basically.
Oh, that's,
like,
interesting.
Does that make sense?
It does make sense.
Like, working class drag performers, as opposed to, like, I've been on TV and I'm traveling the world and I'm kind of, you know.
It's like being, like, a Michelin star award winning chef, but you're not Gordon Ramsay. You're still incredible at your craft and well respected, and you work a lot, but you just haven't had, like, your own TV show or whatever.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I get that. I think that's actually. That's the first time I've gotten an answer like that, and I really like that. I think that's great. Next question. What was your worst performance ever?
I don't know. I don't have anything that jumps out to me that, like, God, I wish I didn't do that. I enjoy alcoholic beverages from time to time, so I'm sure that in, you know, I'm 33 years old, for anybody listening, in my younger years, I may have done some things that were really sloppy. I don't think I've ever done anything that I was like, oh my God, like I want to die. Like that was the worst thing I've ever done. I just kind of walk, like the same way we were talking about how you go onto the stage, you become something else. When I walk away from it, I like almost forget like what happened, like drunk or not. Like mm-hmm. I just, like whatever happened, happened. I can't yeah. change it.
Well, that's kind of the beauty of live art too. Like this is why I loved theater when I was growing up. It was like, it just happens in that moment.
Yeah. And whatever happens in those 3.5 to 4 minutes happens. Yeah, I don't have like a thing that jumps out to me. It's like, oh my God.
Did you never fall on your face?
Oh, of course I've fallen. Of course I've fallen. I'm 6.5 feet tall, alcohol consumption, 6-inch heels, dark nightclub. Of course I've fallen. But you know,
yeah. Sometimes it's fun.
It is kind of fun.
Yeah.
If you own it and you know.
It's easy for me to fall because I don't have like a long way to yeah. go.
Yeah, you're like, you're pretty much sitting on the ground when you're standing up.
Yeah. Yeah. And then my next question is, what is the best performance you've ever given?
That's also really hard to answer. But I will tell you one of the proudest moments that I had. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it was the best performance. I got to open up for King Princess, who's an amazing queer pop artist. A couple years ago, somebody like reached out to me in an email. You should look her up, by the way. She's amazing. At Royale. So down next door to where we are right now.
Down the service
sold elevator. Out show to like teenagers. And they're like, we want a drag person to like open the show and like do two numbers. And it was probably one of the craziest things I ever did. I was like, I want to make it clear to you, first of all, I'm not a musician. Because they were like, how long is your set? And I was like, whenever people say,
is that always fun? Set,
I'm like, how long is my like, giggity giggity like mega mix? It's like 5.5 minutes. And I'm like, okay. But yeah, that was like one of the like most sickening feelings that I had. And just like coming out on stage to literally an audience of like, you know,
screaming ready,
yeah,
just and ready,
I was
to
like,
love you.
And they gave me the mic and I was like emceeing and I was like, y'all having a good fucking time, like all the stupid things that we say,
and they're like, yes, we're 16, yes,
we're 16, we're screaming and crying right now. And I was like, this isn't real to me.
Those moments are so, they make everything else worth it. Yeah,
you know,
those moments are incredible.
Other things sprinkled out in between, but yeah, that was one of the. And I don't even remember what I did. I had like a reveal. I had like these. It was during Pride time, so I think I had like braids that I made, like that were rainbow colored. And whatever I did, I don't know. But whatever I did on the stage, they would cheer. Like I would like kick my foot up a little bit, and they're like, "Yes, go off, bitch!
Those are my favorite."
Yeah,
times.
You can be like,
all you have to do is. Catch a beat now and again, give them a little hip and then a twirl. And
they like, start throwing up. Like,
yeah.
But yeah. It was fucking nuts. And yeah, I like cried backstage because I like couldn't even take it.
Those moments that make you feel like not only a superstar, but it makes you feel like your art is actually reaching somebody and affecting them in a positive way. That's what really makes it worthwhile.
It really does. That's the biggest. That's, if I leave you with anything, that is the most important thing to me, is letting is.
Well, this is my last question,
okay.
Then.
Let's go.
What would your advice be to anybody out there who is a local queen or is looking to become a local queen?
If you would like to do it, I encourage you to do it. Don't hold yourself to anyone else's standards. Don't compare yourself to other people and try to be, you know, if you want to do drag, do it for you and do it if it makes you happy. You know, don't use it as like a beacon to like just get attention or, you know, because you think that you have to. What was I going to say with the last question? I had something. Oh, I was saying the most important thing to me is letting people know that my drag is an example, mm-hmm. and to let people know that, you know, people come to me, I wish I could do what you do. I wish I could be a part of this. And I'm like, I'm here to let you know that you can. And, you know, if you're a little tiny baby queer person somewhere out there and you feel weird about dressing up, you don't want to wear dresses because you don't want to be made fun of, or this, that, the other thing, I'm what I do is all encompassing of the statement of you can do it. Mm-hmm. You can do it. And I encourage you to do it and be yourself.
Yeah. You
know, as cheesy and silly as that might sound, it's be yourself, not. Believe in yourself. And yeah, let your fucking queer little flag fly.
Yes. You get a gay goat from that. Yes. I love that. All right. So it's been so much fun talking to you. The really cool thing about this is the last couple that I've done, I'm literally like just meeting you for the first time. So it's a real conversation.
Yeah.
And it's so fun for me
to
get to.
This is not rehearsed.
No, I mean, it's just so much fun for me to get to know you with all of these people who, you know, have supported me that are now going to support you. Where can they find you to support you?
Well, I live in the basement of this hotel. I clean the floors. No, I'm kidding. You can find me on Instagram or Venmo, wink, wink, at severity_stone. I will be performing with Ginger Minj tomorrow at Legacy Nightclub, which
by
I'm
the
sure
time,
by the time this comes out.
This
yeah,
was a couple weeks ago, but
whatever, you missed it. It was 2 weeks ago, but
we were great.
We did so good. I did so many cartwheels, and you did that split.
Well, I did the split under your cartwheel.
It was so crazy.
And then you picked me up in your leg and flung me over. It was nice.
Your eyebrows flew off. They landed on the ceiling.
They're still there.
But yeah, Severity, SEVERITY_stone on most things. Follow me on Insta. You know, I know that sounds superficial, but it helps also local performers to get more bookings. Because the more followers we have, the more people notice our stuff. So yeah, look me up. And Severity Stone on Facebook if you want to follow me. And
YouTube, everything.
I have a YouTube channel. I need to upload more things. But yeah. Yeah.
Look for our amazing cartwheel performance on there.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, you surfers. Won't find it, but look for it.
Also, follow the Serve Network on Twitch, which is where I did most of my digital drag stuff, which we didn't even talk about, but maybe next time.
Yeah.
Follow
the Serve Network. Hey, we've literally got 3 minutes if you want to talk about it.
Well, that's important because, like, you know, Serve Thursday is based off of the Serve Network, which Violencia started, who's hosting the show that we're doing tomorrow. During the time of pandemic, we had to resort to digital drag things, and Violencia stuck a neck out and made this channel for us and a platform for us. I host a show called Witchcraft Wednesday, which I haven't done for a while because we've been back to the regular gigs. But if y'all have Twitch, follow it. We still do things on there. Serve Mondays is still a thing, so yeah, check that out.
Wonderful. And of course, as always, you can find me on all social media. Just go to gingerminjonline.com. Gingerminjonline.com, not gingerminj.com, because that is porn.
And that's my website.
Yes. But, I mean, it's of me, but that's where the cartwheel footage is. So if you want to see that, go find us there. Thank you so much for coming on and talking to me. This really has been so much fun. Of course you can hug me. This has been amazing. I'm such a fan now. I'm going to go follow you on all social media. And for everybody out there, this is Ginger Minj signing off. And remember that not only are you a local queen, you are a hometown shero. We love you so much, and we'll talk to you next time. Bye.
Life's better with American Family Insurance because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.